Cha-ching. That's the sound of Lowe's Labor Day savings. Get up to 45% off select major appliances and save up to an additional $100 on select laundry pairs. Plus, get 3 bags of Miracle-Gro 0.75 cubic foot garden soil for just $10. Labor Day deals are on now at Lowe's, in-store and online. Valid through 9/9 while supplies last. Selection varies by location. See Lowe's.com for more details. Soil offer excludes Alaska and Hawaii.
I'm John Batchelor. I welcome my good colleague Peter Berkowitz of the Hoover Institution, writing his column for Real Clear Politics about the Pope, Pope Leo XIV, Papa Leone, referred to by my Italian friend, Magnifica Humanitas, a 43,000-word encyclical at the end of May. And the Pope's concern is not just with the artificial intelligence phenomenon, but it dominates the conversation. Peter, a very good evening to you. Your reference to the Pope made me go back and look at the document itself. It has a lot of unanswered questions that are important to raise. We don't have to answer them. We just have to keep raising good questions. Your reading of the Pope is that he's cautious and reluctant to endorse the AI. Why?
Why? Because artificial intelligence is like all technology, all technological breakthroughs, it brings great blessings, especially in the realm of science and the realm of technology. It has bringing great new efficiencies in the economy. At the same time, it brings curses, as all technologies have. I'm tempted to also bring in the observation of my colleague Thomas Sowell, that everything in politics is a matter of trade-offs. We're always confronting costs and benefits. So the full name of the Pope's encyclical is On Safeguarding the Human Person in the Time of Artificial Intelligence. This is the great theme of the encyclical, and he does think that, yes, AI brings specific new dangers, but he's in no sense a Luddite. AI is here. The future is AI. The Pope writes 43,000 words to help us understand how we can live better amid the rapid changes that AI is bringing about.
This has happened before, a technological change that shifts everything. You referenced earlier examples of this, 1891, dealing with the Industrial Revolution. And we can go back even farther, the idea of ships and all of a sudden plying the world and meeting people who had no reason, you had no reason to believe that they'd ever heard of Jesus. It was all a shock. And that was the magnificent sailing ships that came out of the last 1,000 years. How has the Pope dealt with all of those disruptive advances?
Well, first I want to underscore how serious he thinks this risk is. And by the way, you're quite right to mention previous disruptions. Here's another previous disruption we should mention that threw the world into a crisis. Mr. Gutenberg invented movable type, the printing press. People thought it might be the end of the world with all this information now in the hands of ordinary people. Well, in one line, the Pope summarizes his concern. And he writes, I'm going to quote this, "The risk of dehumanization, of building a future that excludes God and reduces the other to a means, reducing another to a means, treating the human beings as a means, is an ancient and ever new temptation that takes on a technical guise." This is very important because the Pope wants us to appreciate, on the one hand, we're dealing with a challenge that is very new. Who heard of a machine that actually understands your questions and replies to you? Not only in excellent Chinese, I was going to say not only in excellent English, but if you wish, in excellent Chinese or excellent Arabic or excellent Italian, but answers you instantly, performs extraordinary complex calculations, can supervise the conduct of many different machines and people at the same time. This is an extraordinary technology, but dehumanization at the hands of technology, for that matter, at the hands of our fellow human beings, this is an old, old problem, an old, old challenge. It goes back, as the Pope says, to the Tower of Babel.
My observation about the Pope's concern has to do with the general understanding of humility in the face of advance. The powers of the AI are what you say. I have occasion to use AI every day, several times a day. It's important to my work, and it's given me productivity. I can get back an hour of the evening because of
it. Yes.
At the same time, it is not in charge. It is not leading me. You're not actually saying that AI is setting our agenda. The concern that you have, and we will come to it momentarily about education, is that it's keeping young people from the experience of revelation. And I would say, I would apply that to the Pope's concern as well. When a machine can take the place of human company, that is not a positive. That's not a good development. And right now that might be happening. People forming what you'd have to say is mutual relationships with a robot who is giving you back your own language.
Yes. Yes, I myself don't really participate in it, but I've seen it in friends and acquaintances. Actually, I marvel at the way some people I know speak with these large language models in the very tone that you would speak, that you would use to speak to a fellow human being, to the extent of complaining when AI does not respond properly to their jests, to their jokes, at which prompt AI, of course, apologizes. And next time a joke is uttered, AI responds with a, "That's very funny," or a "Well point, cleverly put," and so on. And the person on the other end of this conversation, again, is using a tone and using a language, terms that you would use with friends, acquaintances, therapists. It's amazing.
Now that we've identified some of the concern, let us turn to the young people because they don't have our defenses. We're of an age that we've seen everything five or six times, and you can tell where you're going. All right, but when you're 19 or 18 years old, when I read your essays, I try to recapture at some point how overwhelmed I felt at those lectures when I was 18,
yes,
19 years old and didn't understand the references and the metaphors and the easy way the professor moved from the blackboard to speaking directly to us. AI can do all that and replace the professor, but also replace the student. You've seen it in your work, Peter.
Oh yes, there's a tremendously powerful temptation for students to use AI to perform actually simple but essential tasks for education. I'll give you an example. Suppose you ask a student to for class for a discussion question to write 250 words before class, ungraded, on the Lockean roots of the Declaration of Independence.
Oh,
the
Peter.
Student.
You take me back to 1966. All right, go ahead.
Exactly. It was my intention. And except, unlike in 1966, the student says, "That's fair." The student proceeds to type into a AI model, "What are the Lockean roots of the Declaration of Independence?" Hits return, and almost instantly, and the student will say, "Give me three good ideas" in response to this question. Student hits return. In less than about 3 seconds, the student has three good paragraphs on this matter. The student cuts from AI, pastes into an email to the instructor, and the instructor receives three good paragraphs. Now, 3 years ago or so, if you tried to proceed as I've just described, an observant instructor would see what you're up to, because it would have been some clumsy language, something dramatically inappropriate, some fact in there which it would take a lot of knowledge to know, but isn't completely inappropriate. This would tip the professor off. Doesn't happen today. These models are so good that if you ask for three good paragraphs, the students get three good paragraphs. They haven't had to think for a moment. And as you were suggesting a moment ago, John, it's not easy to persuade a 19-year-old. In fact, we ourselves still recoil at this language, that the only person that they're injuring is themselves. They recoil. I don't use the language because I know they recoil it. But somehow you must teach them that the exercise of generating the thoughts by yourself, the practice of making mistakes, recognizing the mistakes, and correcting the mistakes, this is essential to the growth of the strength and suppleness of your mind.
I'm speaking with Peter Berkowitz of the Hoover Institution. His remarks about the AI and the Pope and his teaching experience in his column, Real Clear Politics. This is the part where Peter and I come to the tough stuff, okay? We're seniors. What is to be done when we come back? I'm John Batchelor.